Like, I look back to 2012. People go today, they're like, dude, dealer playbook, how have you been able to do these things and how are you doing these things? Dude, because I did it. I did it in 2012 was the first time I launched a podcast, and it was awful. Okay, it sucked. But I realized too, like, and you probably find this, I mean, all the time, I think because people are afraid potentially of failing or whatever their perception of failure is, it makes them start to overthink. And when they overthink, they underact. But I've realized just in my experience that, you know, the first time I do anything, it's not going to be good. The first time, I listened to the first 50 episodes of this podcast and I'm like, what was I thinking? You know? And then I listened to the first 100 episodes and I go, what was I thinking? But I realize how crucial that was to getting to where I am today, realizing that 100 episodes from now, I'm going to look back at these and go like, whoa, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
And it's because that movement, getting into it, doing the action is what actually creates clarity for me.
And so many people, like you said, Michael, so many people are scared to do the beginning part. They're scared to suck. Okay. But you got to realize that you have to suck first before you can be great. There's nobody on the face of the earth that didn't suck at what they do, you know, at some point. And there's a million Instagram memes that will show you that, you know, Michael Jordan got cut from his freshman basketball team. Right. And that Michael Jackson got refused on some friggin' TV show or by some friggin' music label or something in the beginning.
Right.
And Oprah couldn't get a job as a newscaster for so long. Like, she got fired from one after the other and all she was doing was the weather or something. And I'm totally ad-libbing those, you know, but, yeah, you know, Lincoln ran for office so many times before, you know, and lost before he actually became president. There's a million of those. And it's because it's the truth. You know, you have to suck before you can actually be successful at anything. Like, right now, I'm starting a new Facebook Live show for basically to promote the book, to promote the 7-Minute Setup book. And I'm calling it the 7-Minute Setup Live. Okay. So it's a different format than the show I've been doing already for like 3 years. It's different than Live with Lopes. There's, number one, there's no interview and there's no 7 points. It's not a how to follow these 7 steps type of thing. It's a completely new show flow and completely new format. I did the first one this past Sunday and at the end of it, I'm like, wow, that sucked. And I'm like, wow, that sucked. Maybe I should just go and just like dig a hole in my backyard and stick my head in it right now. Like, oh my God, I can't believe I actually did that live. And while I'm thinking that, my Facebook Messenger and my texts are exploding with people like, that was awesome. That was fantastic. Oh my God, a whole different side of you. That was great. I love that there's no car stuff in there and this and that, you know?
Yeah.
So we're always, you know, the second part of that, we're always going to be the worst, our own worst critic. We're going to be our own judge with no sympathy whatsoever and no empathy. We're just going to think that we suck at everything. And I actually want to tell you that, like, that's a good thing, because if you can take it and use it as a tool, it will help you to get better and it'll help you to improve. If you use it the wrong way, you know, you'll be digging a hole in your backyard and sticking your head in it after you do anything.
Well, you talk about it in the book too, like, kind of the overarching principle of this whole thing is self-awareness. I mean, that's one of the things that I kind of picked up on. And in order for me to be self-aware means that I also, going back to what you said earlier, I know that I am my fiercest competitor. Like, I am competing against me. I look in the mirror, that's my competition. But the self-awareness piece, knowing, like, yeah, for you, for example, you know, okay, I do want to go dig a hole in the backyard. Like, you have to go through that thought process in order to ultimately get to where you know you need to be, which is, but I'm going to keep doing it.
Right.
Like, it's all crucial and it's uncomfortable in the moment and you don't like the way it feels in the moment. Like, dude, I can remember doing webinars where I'm like, whoa, I just completely suck at doing webinars. And of course, I didn't know how to ride a bike without training wheels first. Like, I didn't know how to do anything until somebody showed me and then I did it over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, you didn't know how to run without walking and falling. You didn't learn how to walk without crawling and bumping into stuff or falling on your face. You know, yeah. You didn't know how to do any of this stuff. We didn't know how to speak. Look, but you know, I told this story the other night on the 7 Minute Setup Live show. But in kindergarten, first grade, and second grade, I was in speech class, right? Because having a very, very similar upbringing that you had as mm-hmm. as mine, as being first generation yeah. Americans in an immigrant household, right? Yeah. When I was little, I was taught I was taught English and I was taught Portuguese, right? At the same time, simultaneously. So what do you think happened to me when I showed up at school? I had an accent.
Yeah.
Right? I had an accent.
Calling all your friends Kareed.
Yeah.
Hi, Kareed. Squeeze my cheek. Hi, Kareed. Yeah.
So I had an accent. So immediately they put me in speech class for enunciation and pronunciation and everything like that. And it made me feel like crap, to be honest. You know, it made me feel like shit. And then Portuguese was outlawed in the house at that point because I had to go to speech class. And that caused me to lose probably 80% of my ability to speak Portuguese. Right now, I understand what anybody says to me, but for me to articulate and speak it back is almost impossible. But my point being that in kindergarten, first grade, and second grade, I was in speech class. But now I spend a lot of time as a speaker. Now I have 2 running shows on Facebook. Now I'm a guest on your show and on multiple other shows. You know, so just because it was your story before doesn't mean that it's going to continue to be your story for the rest of your life. It just means that that's the period that you went through. That was that season that you went through. And that was a season that you had to go through. And a lot of, you know, let's spin this into automotive. A lot of dealers don't want to go through the season.
Yeah.
They don't want to go through that season of challenge or that season of opportunity. They just want to get right to, you know, they just want to get right to being number one on the list and things like that. And there's no dealer that's number one in their market or number one on their list that didn't go through their season of challenge of multiple challenges. Because when you have a store that sells 50 cars a month and you want to get to 80, that's a certain set of challenges you have to overcome. And then from 80 to 120 is another set of challenges. And then 120 to 240, and then 240 to 500, sure. And then 500 to 800. Right. Every one of them brings different challenges and different things, and you have to be able to grow with each one of them. Number one, you have to be willing to have the self-awareness to say, okay, I mastered selling 120 cars a month. Now to sell 180, I have to break this stuff, and I have to completely change what I'm doing. I have to change the way I'm handling leads. I have to move some people around from one seat to another seat because this guy's great for 120, but he's not good for 180. He can only, he maxed out at 120. He peaked. Now I got to move him into here. My BDC manager maybe can only work a crew that can handle 1,000 leads a month. If I give her 2,000, she's going to crack like an egg and not make an omelet. You know, she's going to crack like an egg and just make a mess. So so I have to change that. I have to move that seat around, and they get uncomfortable and they don't want to do it. And then it's not the other dealer that sold more cars. It's the fact that they didn't sell more cars, because even in the automobile business, in reality, the only person that anybody in the dealership competes with, the salespeople, the managers, the dealer principal, him or herself, the only person that they compete with is themselves. We think, you know, they look and we think that they compete with the other dealers because the OEM sets it up that way. Yep. They send you the report every freaking day and right. You look at your number compared to everybody else's number. And then you either get jealous or you get envious or you get boastful because you're on top, and then somebody passes you and then you go outside and you yell at your managers, whatever, you know, but they set all that up. The reality is that every dealer should be looking at, you know, how many opportunities did I have this past month? How many opportunities did I have the same month the year before? Why is there a difference in the two? What did I do? Most importantly, what did I do with the opportunities? How did I handle them? Because that's where my real growth is. And how did I handle those opportunities? And what did I do with them? Me, what did I do with them? Not what did Friendly Motors down the street do with theirs, because you don't know their numbers. And if you did know their numbers, they're cooked anyway and they're fake.